The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mark Newman from the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I shall share with you information from various medical sources. So first, from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter, Second Opinion. Question, are plant-based milks, such as soy milk or almond milk, healthier than cow's milk? Answer, cow's milk or dairy and other plant-based beverages you mentioned can all be healthy choices. However, there are wide nutritional differences depending on the type of product and the brand. You can generally break down the benefits by, first, fat content. Skim milk has negligible amounts of fat, but the amounts of cholesterol-raising saturated fat increase stepwise with 1%, 2%, or whole milk. Soy and almond milk contain about 2 to 4 grams of fat per cup, but it's predominantly healthy monounsaturated and polyunsaturated fats. Protein. Dairy milk takes the protein title with a little over 8 grams per cup. Soy milk comes in a close second with about 7 grams per cup. Traditional almond milk lags behind with just 1 gram per cup. Of note, some newer nut milk varieties have added pea protein. Calcium. Dairy milk naturally has about 300 milligrams of calcium per cup. Many soy or almond milks are fortified with calcium to at least match the amount of calcium in dairy milk, but you'll need to check nutrition labels to determine calcium content. Added sugars. Unflavored white dairy milk and unsweetened soy and almond milk contain no added sugars. However, for some, the taste of unsweetened soy or almond milk can be an issue. You may find between 4 and 20 plus grams of added sugars in a sweetened or flavored beverage. Checking the nutrition label is the best way to find a taste you like with minimal added sugars. Remember, unflavored white dairy milk will have sugar listed on the label, but it's naturally occurring milk sugar or lactose. In summary, it's tough to beat dairy milk for balanced nutrition, with non-fat skim milk the best choice for most older adults. Still, not everyone can tolerate dairy milk, and some may prefer to avoid animal products or simply want to mix in something different. Unsweetened soy milk is the closest match nutritionally, plus you get a few grams of healthy fats that you won't get from skim milk. Almond milk, while not unhealthy, is less nutritious, though is less nutrient dense, in particular with limited protein content. With soy or almond milk, check labels for adequate calcium and minimal added sugars. Question, I've never had a fracture or any bone health issues. Should I still get a home density test? Answer, it depends. I'm sorry, a bone density test. Answer, it depends. A bone density test uses x-rays to measure the amount of calcium and other minerals in a segment of bone. By identifying decreases, your doctor can determine your risk of fractures and diagnose and monitor progression of osteoporosis. If you're a woman, 65 or older, a bone density test is recommended. Even if testing reveals your bone health is good, this test can serve as a baseline measurement for future testing. Testing is also important for women and men who've broken a bone after age 50. For men without fractures, the answer isn't quite as clear. The U.S. Preventive Services Task Force doesn't recommend routine bone density testing for men because men have a higher bone mass and lose bone more slowly than do women. They're at a lower risk of fracture. There's also no conclusive evidence that osteoporosis medications can prevent fractures in men. However, up to 1 in 4 men over 50 will break a bone due to osteoporosis. Groups such as the National Osteoporosis Foundation still recommend testing for men 70 and older. Men between the ages of 50 and 69 and women under 65 also may want to have bone density testing if they have risk factors for osteoporosis, including a family history of the disease or a history of fractures. Talk to your doctor about whether bone density testing is right for you. From the Harvard Health Letter, spring cleaning, why more people are uncluttering the mind for better health. Most of us sense instinctively that clutter is unhealthy. Sure, we may joke about a disorganized desk or a teenager's messy room, but we feel that a clean, organized space is a healthier, more soothing environment. What about a cluttered mind? A mind constantly presented with different simultaneous challenges and distractions. Is that unhealthy and is there a fix? Uncluttering, or as is usually said, emptying your mind through meditation has a host of health-related benefits, and maybe that's why people are taking up the practice. Data from a national survey conducted by the CDC's National Center for Health Statistics, published online by the CDC in November 2018, found that 14% of American adults reported meditating in 2017, compared with just 4% in 2012. What's the fuss? Meditating counters the body's stress response by triggering the relaxation response, a well-studied physiological change that can help lower your blood pressure, heart rate, breathing rate, oxygen consumption, adrenaline levels, and levels of stress hormone cortisol. Research has shown that the relaxation response changes your brain in ways that increase positive emotions and reduce negative emotions such as fear and anger. Harvard research even suggests that the relaxation response can turn on genes that affect the energy in each cell of the body. Meditation as treatment. The health benefits of meditation are so potent that the practice is used as a treatment or complementary therapy for many conditions. Stress management is the best known of these. Meditation is especially helpful at creating calm and slowing racing thoughts and a pounding heart. Meditation is also effective against the following disorders. High blood pressure. Eliciting the relaxation response has been found to significantly lower blood pressure in a high percentage of people, says Dr. Randall Zussman, a cardiologist at Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts General Hospital. This technique alters gene expression and decreases inflammation, enhances insulin sensitivity, and dilates the arteries, leading to a lower blood pressure value. The technique helps people whose medication is not controlling their blood pressure or is causing unwanted side effects, or people who would like to avoid the use of medication if at all possible. Chronic pain. Meditation may affect pain in a number of ways. There are changes in both the central nervous system and the peripheral nervous system. For chronic pain, there are also a host of other mechanisms: how we think, how we feel, how we react, that play a large role in improving pain. Mind-body strategies can change pain perception and make us more aware of and improve dysfunctional movement patterns that result from pain, says Dr. Gloria Yeh, Director of Mind-Body Research at Harvard-affiliated Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Fuzzy thinking. Studies observing the effects of regular meditation on the brain, even after only 2 weeks, generally demonstrate improvement in cognition, especially executive functioning. These changes also affect the way our brains look and work, such as increases in size, activation, and functional connectivity, says Dr. Joel Salinas, a neurologist at Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts General Hospital. Healthy eating habits. One application of mindfulness meditation, which involves focusing on the present moment, appears to help people improve their eating habits. The practice is called mindful eating. In one small study, women who ate out regularly at least 3 times a week and were taught mindful eating principles along with general behavior strategies or ate fewer calories, lost significantly more weight, and had fewer barriers to weight management when eating out compared with controls. In another small study, training in mindful eating and diabetes self-management helped people make healthier food choices, showed modest weight loss, and improved blood glucose control, explains registered dietitian Kathy McManus, who's the director of the Department of Nutrition at Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital. Getting started, there are many forms of meditation, such as mindfulness meditation, transcendental meditation, which is using a repeated sound to empty your thoughts, guided imagery meditation using pleasing mental images to focus, and Tai Chi and yoga, forms of exercise that incorporate focused movements and breathing. You can also meditate by simply sitting quietly, closing your eyes, and focused on your breathing. If you wish, say a word such as peace each time you exhale. When thoughts come to mind, decide to come back to them later and repeat your word. Try to sustain the exercise for a few minutes at first and build up to at least 10 minutes a day. In time, you should notice a difference in how you feel, including a less cluttered mind, and you may even experience better health and wellness. Ask the doctor, is mono a kid's virus only? Question, my teenage granddaughter was diagnosed with mono. Is that just a kid's virus, or can older people get it? Answer, we need to distinguish between the illness mononucleosis or mono and the virus that most often is the cause of the illness, Epstein-Barr virus, which is EBV. Most human beings become infected with EBV early in life, typically in their teenage years. Once we are infected, the virus remains in our bodies for the rest of our lives. It lies asleep inside some of our cells, periodically reawakening to multiply and go on to infect other cells, and then it settles down again. For the vast majority of us, when we first become infected, the virus causes just sniffles or no symptoms at all, according to research by myself and others. Some people, a minority, develop mono, an illness that typically lasts a few weeks and then goes away. In a very few people, usually years after the initial infection, the virus can trigger several different kinds of cancer. How can one virus account for such a wide spectrum of illness? We don't have specific answers. The general answer is that we are all genetically programmed to respond to an infection with a particular microbe in a particular way, that the genetic program is different in each of us, and that the way our body responds to the microbe defines the illness. So the virus that likely caused your granddaughter's mono probably already lives within you and has for most of your life. If, like your granddaughter, you had mono when you were young, that was the moment the virus entered your body. It remains within you, contained. Do all skin cancers have to be removed? Question. My doctor says I have a small skin cancer in my scalp, but it's not melanoma. Do I really need to have it removed? Answer, it's true that melanoma is the most dangerous type of skin cancer because it can spread throughout the body. You definitely need to have any melanoma removed to try to excise it before it spreads. Two other types of skin cancer, basal cell carcinoma and squamous cell carcinoma, are more common than melanoma. It sounds like you have one of these. They spread only rarely, but they do grow larger. Not only is this disfiguring, but delay in removing them makes it harder to remove them with only a minimal scar. And cancers on the scalp, when they become large, can be particularly hard to remove. So yes, most non-melanoma skin cancers are benign and that they are unlikely to metastasize or spread and pose a threat to your life. But that doesn't mean it's fine to ignore them. They should always be removed. Food truck fare. Trendy eats, but are they safe? Pay attention to healthy ingredients, inspection documents, and online reviews. Food trucks, once the catering staples of construction sites, are no longer just about convenience. These rolling kitchens bring innovative gourmet food to busy streets and crowded parking lots with diverse menus that attract hordes of hungry customers and discerning foodies. But as popular as true food trucks are nationally, a billion-dollar industry that defines the landscape in places like Los Angeles, Miami, Austin, Texas, and Portland, Oregon, they still serve restaurant fare, which is typically loaded with saturated fat, salt, refined carbohydrates, sugar, and calories. What's on the menu? You can find every cuisine imaginable in the world of food trucks, including Korean barbecue tacos, Chinese dim sum, savory dumplings, Cuban sandwiches, French crepes, Greek sausages, Persian lamb kebabs, and gourmet American burgers. The fun is discovering the creative food combinations by chefs who continually push the culinary envelope. You may come across collard green quesadillas, crispy lasagna with chicken, rice and tzatziki, which is cucumber yogurt, sauce, bacon, date, and goat cheese empanadas, which is a Latin American pastry, fried chicken and mashed potatoes served in spicy waffle cones, grass-fed beef on brioche with Chinese seasoning, or marinated beets with quinoa, kale, brown rice, charred green beans, hazelnuts, and creamy miso dressing. You may even discover a grilled cheese dessert sandwich with ricotta and chocolate sauce. Dietary risks. Some food trucks focus on healthy dishes. We're seeing more trucks geared toward foods that are vegan, which are plant-only, or gluten-free, notes registered dietitian Kathy McManus from Harvard. But it's more common to find comfort food. Those foods are often fried or made with lots of butter and salt, and they're low in ingredients we need for good health, such as vegetables, whole grains, fruit, and fiber. The big concerns are these. Sodium. Eating a high salt diet can increase the risk for a heart attack or a stroke in some people and negate the effects of many medications to treat high blood pressure, such as diuretics. The American Heart Association recommends no more than 2,300 milligrams of sodium per day, with an ideal limit of 1,500 milligrams per day for most adults. Saturated fat. Consuming lots of saturated fat promotes the production of LDL or bad cholesterol, which can accumulate in your arteries and increase your risk for heart disease and stroke. McManus advises limiting saturated fat to less than 15 grams per day. Sugar. A flood of sugar, whether it's from added sugar or refined carbohydrates, can spike your blood sugar, make you hungrier later, and add pounds to your waistline. The American Heart Association recommends no more than 24 grams of added sugar per day for women and 36 grams for men. Other issues. Food trucks are small businesses and are not typically required to post the ingredients in their dishes, although regulations vary from city to city. You're probably not going to find a nutritional analysis on the foods they serve, and you won't know from a nutrition standpoint what you're eating. That especially is concerning if you're on a restricted diet or have food allergies. Another issue, cleanliness. Food trucks are regulated and must pass health inspections, but inspections might occur just once a year, and it depends on the location and local laws. Plus, there's no way to know how often a food truck kitchen is cleaned. Is it hosed off and sanitized nightly, or whether food truck operators are trained in proper food safety and handling? A lack of cleanliness or food training may put you at risk for foodborne illness. What you should do. Keep an eye out for notices such as health inspection documents that are sometimes posted in a food truck window. Some places like New York City now grade food trucks and issue stickers with letter grades A, B, or C. If you want to know how often a truck's kitchen is cleaned or the ingredients used in the food, ask the operators, although they may be tough when there's a crowd. That may be tough, rather, when there's a crowd. Another resource, online reviews. Just search for the word review along with the name of the food truck and your city. When you're ready to order, keep healthy ingredients in mind. If it has processed meat or it is fried, buttery, creamy, salty, or sugary, don't make it a steady diet. But once in a while, it might be okay to try it and explore new types of foods. Getting in on the kettlebell craze. The weights add more oomph to your workout, but you'll have to mind some safety rules if you use them. Move over, dumbbells. Kettlebells are cool again. The little weights with handles have been used by athletes around the world for centuries and gained popularity as the staples of 19th century strongmen. Today, kettlebells have made it to the mainstream as the featured tools in exercise classes and gyms, with home versions of kettlebells available on the shelves of every big box store. What's the attraction? Kettlebells work multiple muscle groups at one time, so you get a lot of bang for your buck with each exercise, says Nancy Caparelli, a senior physical therapist at Harvard-affiliated Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. How they help. Kettlebells are heavy. The smallest is about 8 pounds, but available weights go up to 105 pounds at the competitive level. and they have many benefits. Holding a lot of weight by handle engages your arm, leg, shoulder, back, and abdominal muscles. They pull on your muscles and help to strengthen them. They pull on your bones, help stimulate new bone cell growth. Using kettlebells can improve your posture. With the weight in front of you, your back muscles have to straighten up more to counteract the force of the kettlebell pulling you forward. Swinging a kettlebell also challenges your balance and helps to improve it. Kettlebell risks. Along with benefits, kettlebells have numerous risks. One is obvious, dropping the weight on your foot. But lifting too much too soon or lifting a kettlebell the wrong way can lead to muscle strains, rotator cuff tears, and falls. If you have the bone thinning disease osteoporosis or its precursor state osteopenia, lifting a heavy kettlebell may increase your risk for fractures, caution some experts. If you're at high risk for falling, as in the case for many older adults, using a kettlebell can add to your fall risk. Should you try it? Capillary says using kettlebells should be safe for healthy older adults with some stipulations. Get your doctor's okay first. Use the appropriate weight. It depends on the person. Someone who's 5 feet tall and 90 pounds will typically use a lighter kettlebell than someone who's 6 feet tall and 200 pounds. Learn the proper form from a trainer or physical therapist or take a kettlebell class before trying the exercises on your own. You need to know exactly what to do with the kettlebell and which exercises are appropriate. Otherwise, you'll increase your risk for injury even with a lighter kettlebell. It helps to use a kettlebell with a handle wide enough to grip with two hands. Another tip, wear weightlifting gloves since the kettlebell handle can get slippery. But you may want to stay away from kettlebells if you pick one up and can't control it or feel like you're losing your balance, or if you experience pain in your shoulder, low back, or leg. Starter exercises. If you're cleared for kettlebell use, you'll be guided through simple but challenging exercises such as these. The farmer's walk. Pick up one kettlebell on each side, pinch your shoulders down and back, and walk a distance of 20 feet across the gym four times. The suitcase carry. Pick up a kettlebell with one hand, like you're carrying a suitcase, and walk a distance of 20 feet across the gym four times. Don't lean to the side. Repeat the exercise while carrying the kettlebell on the other side. The goblet carry. Pick up the kettlebell with two hands and hold it in front of you as if you're taking a sip from it. Then walk 20 feet back and forth a few times. That works your upper muscle, your arm muscles, shoulders, biceps, and upper back muscles. And finally, the kettlebell swing. Hold the kettlebell with two hands and swing it back and forth between your legs. You'll find kettlebell classes at your local gym or YMCA and kettlebell videos tailored to older adults. For more information, see the kettlebell workout in the Harvard Special Health Report, Strength and Power Training for All Ages. What's causing your shaky hands? Tremors may be nothing to worry about or something more serious, but don't let them go unchecked. Do you ever notice that you can't seem to hold a coffee cup still, or that your hands sometimes tremble as much as interferes with daily chores? Those involuntary hand movements are called tremors, and they're common in middle and older age, says Dr. Chizoba Uma, a neurologist who specializes in movement disorders at Harvard. They're not life-threatening, but people with severe tremors may have a hard time feeding themselves, dressing, or driving. Tremor symptoms. Hand tremors may occur at rest, such as in Parkinson's disease, or they may occur with activity. Most resting hand tremors look like you're rolling a pill between your thumb and index finger. When you do something, the tremor disappears. Hand tremors that occur with activity are described based on when they appear. Postural tremor occurs when your hands are outstretched and gravity is pulling them down. You can't keep the hands completely steady while they're outstretched. Intention tremor starts when you're reaching for a target like a keyhole as you unlock your door. Task-specific tremor occurs when performing an activity such as when you're writing. Causes. We all have a little bit of tremor called a physiologic tremor. It's natural and not usually noticeable. Tremors that aren't natural include these types: enhanced physiologic tremor. Caffeine use, an overactive thyroid, stress, fatigue, or sleep deprivation can intensify physiologic tremor. This tremor may show up as a postural tremor. Medication-induced tremors. Some medications can cause tremors, such as the antidepressant Wellbutrin and the antiarrhythmic drug Cortisone. The result, tremor is often postural. Parkinsonian tremor. This resting pill-rolling tremor can occur with or without the degenerative neurological condition, Parkinson's disease. Essential tremor. This is a benign tremor that causes involuntary shaking in various body parts, including the hands, head, and voice box. A person with essential tremor may have a postural hand tremor or an intention tremor. Cerebellar tremor. This is an intention tremor caused by damage to the cerebellum in the back of the brain, often from a stroke or multiple sclerosis. The cerebellum helps coordinate movement, like reaching out to grasp a doorknob. Cerebellar damage can cause your hand to miss the doorknob. Post-stroke tremor. After a stroke, a person can have a variety of tremors. If there's damage to the cerebellum, there can be an intention tremor. If the damage is in the basal ganglia, the person can have a resting tremor. Withdrawal tremor. People suffering alcohol withdrawal can experience postural tremors. Diagnosis. Diagnosing a tremor requires a physical exam and a careful analysis of your medical history. I want to know what it looks like and if there are any associated features. Is there balance impairment, stiffness, or slowness of movement as in Parkinson's? Or slowness of movement as in Parkinson's disease? Was there a stroke? Is there a brain lesion? Is the person taking certain kind of medication? Does the person consume a lot of caffeine or have any underlying conditions? She says it may be necessary to order lab work to check for thyroid disease or get an image to the brain to check for signs of a past stroke. Treatment. Some tremors can be eliminated or dramatically reduced. For enhanced physiologic tremor, you may just need to cut back on caffeine or manage stress. Tremors caused by thyroid disorder or alcohol withdrawal may be reduced by treating those conditions. And other ways to cope, hand tremors can interfere with eating and other tasks, and it may help to use weighted eating utensils. And to work with an occupational therapist for help with fine motor skills, such as buttoning clothes. Medication-induced tremors may be resolved by switching to a different type of medication. Essential tremor is often treated with medication such as the beta blocker propranolol or Inderol, or the anti-seizure drug primidone, which is mysoline, M-Y-S-O-L-I-N-E. Parkinsonian tremors may be reduced with anti-Parkinsonian medication or a procedure called deep brain stimulation, in which electrodes are implanted in the brain to stimulate areas regulating movement, such as tremors. Tremors from multiple sclerosis, strokes, and brain tremors are not typically reversible. Tremors can be frustrating, but you can learn to live with them. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mark Newman, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long until next time, and if you have any comment or questions, please call 919-832-5138 and stay healthy.